Welcome back to the Investigative Journal. I'm your host, Greg Anthony. You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com on this August 25th, 2014 day in our calendar. And, the next couple shows, today and tomorrow, I'd like to concentrate about Rome and the Bible. And this has an interplay with a story and a play that I'm working on regarding Pastor Tony Alamo and his ministry that is being, I believe, attacked in the same manner that Bible-believing churches have been attacked for hundreds of years. Rome talks out of both sides of its mouth. It lives in a country here and prospers in a country here, expressing to us that they believe in freedom of religion, when behind the scenes, their whole plan has always been to wipe out anybody that thinks differently than them. They do it in a kind of a cagey manner now. But many people, folks, and how this relates to the Alamo story, later in the week and perhaps next week, I've got a couple of really good shows about some of the inside dealings that were going on to bring this man down and his church, and also how to spread that he was a sex child abuser, which I believe is totally false. And I wanted to get his side of the story out. The reason being is that all you're going to hear is the other side of the story in the mainstream media, and I wanted to show you that Rome, the question always is this: has Rome really changed? Because you can't rewrite what they did. Well, you can in mainstream history books, but if you research their long past, you can't deny that they have tortured and murdered millions of people for their quest for control. And the question always comes up when you bring up this history, and the critics of anybody to a show like mine or tries to talk about this says, well, Rome has changed. Look at them now. Look at the ecumenical movement. Look at the Pope now, who seems to be stretching his arms out to every poor person in the world. And I say, no, they haven't, because they've always been a group of double-talking liars. And it's harsh words coming from me, being a former Catholic, but it's the truth. And the reason I say it's the truth is because a lot of evidence stacks up to verify what I'm saying. And so I'm using Tony Alamo, writing a play about his story, which is really a good one. It involves Hollywood. It involves a lot of different things that, a man that could have probably been a very successful record producer and stayed in Hollywood and made millions and changed. However, he did use his business sense to build a ministry that spoke in these terms. For example, when I do a radio show, you're not going to get millions of listeners because that's the way Rome has it set up. But what Tony did was he went outside that realm and started doing shortwave shows, started doing a lot of different things, getting a lot of different people to listen. And that's why Rome came down on him. And to verify that even further, I am doing something with a guy by the name of Tupper Saucy, who wrote a book called Rulers of Evil. And I find the same pattern with him. And once he reached a critical mass, so to speak, well, whatever Rome and the powers that be consider a critical mass, they come down hard. And they came down hard on him as well. And so there's two modern-day people who are trying to get the truth out. And so I wanted to use these next two shows talking about Rome and the Bible, and have they really changed? Well, I'm going to use two books to help me. One is called Rome and the Bible, tracing the history of the Roman Church and its persecution of Bible and Bible believers. It's written by David Cloud. Another book, which I'm going to talk about today, is called The 50 Years in the Church of Rome, A Conversation of a Roman Catholic Priest, Charles Chiniqui. And today I may spend some time talking a little bit about Abraham Lincoln, how the Vatican was instrumental in killing him, and how Chiniqui, this priest who left the papacy during that period in our history, which was a very bloody period. What part of our history hasn't been bloody, by the way? I mean, think about it. I don't remember ever living when there wasn't a war, maybe a few years here and there. But supposed country of Christians and freedom, and that's our, we espouse democracy and goodness. We're constantly bombing people and killing people and provoking people. And I believe the use of the Vatican as spies, Jesuit priests as spies, fomenting wars like they did in France during the French Revolution, and how they did it in our revolution, which I went over in the last few weeks. I wanted to move today just a little bit regarding their interplay with fomenting our civil war, which cost millions. You know, how many of our brothers, we had brothers fighting against brothers. I mean, it was a bloody battle that didn't need to take place. But isn't that the way it always is? I mean, do we really think we need to be over there? Are we going to bomb Syria? You know, this is a pattern, folks. It isn't one country hating the other. It isn't one country, you know, I find it so ironic that if you really look deeply, all these countries seem to be fighting each other. You know, on the news pages of the Washington Post and the New York Times and CNN and all this stuff. But when you look at some of the things that are going on in science and the world behind us, weather manipulation, all these different things, they're all in agreement. They all have these little, I remember I told you about all these weather, let's just use the a layman's term, weather modification plants and different factories that they've set up with all these different scientific things. They're all over the world in countries that are supposedly fighting each other. I mean, and if you start looking at this and you start seeing where they're in agreement, you really understand that at the top levels, all these big shot politicians work together and are given a program, so to speak. Somebody's got to be manipulating this. They're not smart enough to do it. And as we saw in the Revolutionary War, it can be done. And behind the scenes, we had the Jesuit order very, very instrumental in bringing about that conflict for a reason. And the reason was simply, it's not a simple reason, but if they could get into America, excuse me, I've had a little hoarse throat lately, if they could get into America, get their foot in the door, because they weren't welcome there in the beginning because of what had happened in Europe and the intrigues that were playing out there. If they could get into America, get a foot in the door, use freedom of religion and freedom of the press as a guise, wow, what an empire they could build. And look at what they've done today. Just check out their vast land holdings. Just check out the diocese they have. Check out all of the politicians that are trained at Georgetown University in the School of Foreign Service that are under the wing of the Pope, in a sense. Not in a sense, because basically they have a plan for this country, and they've had it since the beginning. And no better way to do it than to talk out of both sides of your mouth. Use the Constitution. Use freedom of religion, when in fact the last thing they want is freedom of religion, and the last thing they want is a republic or a democratic society, because they can't control that. Their religion of choice, truthfully, if they sat down and truthfully told what they were doing, is fascism. And I believe that they have a manipulative plan that's still in effect today. And what I've tried to do is show you that Rome has not changed. So tomorrow we're going to spend a lot of time in David Cloud's book, Rome and the Bible, because many people in the world are ignorant of some of the important segments of this Vatican church history. Many individuals know little to nothing about the relentless war that papal Rome waged against both Holy Bible and Bible-believing Christians. for centuries, papal Rome did all she could to prevent the translation of the Bible into vernacular common languages such as German, French, Spanish, Italian, and English. Now, many people say, well, and especially in America, I mean, what's the difference? I don't believe in God. I don't believe in the Bible. I believe in this New Age philosophy of enlightenment. And if you look at Father Pierre de Chardin, a Jesuit priest, that's where this whole thing started. Now, I said earlier that anybody who has skepticism about Christianity is a prey for the Vatican. Now, I also said that you as an American citizen have the right to your own beliefs, and I agree with that. You, when I say the Bible and you don't believe in the Bible, that's fine. Don't get turned off. It's a good historical record for you. And for those who really do believe in the Bible, I think what you'll see is that Rome not only controls you through your spiritual endeavors, it'll try to control you secularly. So there is a bridge here that both people can learn. Because like I said, over the years I found that people that were skeptical about the Bible would turn this story off completely. And it was harder to get to them about Rome's secular intrigues and the Jesuits' secular intrigues. Now, people that were basically Bible believers, and we'll use that as a general term, many different types of Bible believers, they were easier to get to. They seemed to be more open to this story because they were reading about the persecutions of Rome and understanding what Rome did from a spiritual point of view. And I found that many, many people stop there and continue on their quest, basically understanding that Rome was this way and looking to the Bible for some constant spiritual guidance. And they wouldn't go farther into the secular point of view of what the Vatican was doing in your government, what it was doing, how they operated, where this came from, and even to the point where when you look at some of the Bible stories, you can really see that this is an important aspect of Rome and what they're doing is the not only the control of your spiritual mind and in a sense your body, but also your pocketbook and everything about the life around you. So then there was a group of people who were adamant, you know, Bible believers that would go to this extent and put both of these stories together, which means putting Rome's quest for financial control, Rome's quest for spiritual control together, and then the story becomes even more intriguing and more damning for Rome. So the point I'm trying to make is that's why you see a lot of this clouding of the issues. That's why you see, I believe, you know, and I'm talking here off the cuff, but I believe that's why Rome created the, internally it's always been a kind of an organization that, put it this way, is suspect in its moral values. And that's amongst its members. So it's not, you know, you couldn't even, what stories about the Vatican have you heard on CNN and in the Washington Post and around the world mostly? Oh, the sex scandals, the priests who are abusing children, constant money being paid out, the hiding of many priests. And I believe that Rome uses this to their advantage because it can state to you, look, we have a bad group of people in this church. Our church at the base core is good, and we're trying to rid ourselves of these people. Maybe the Illuminati, infiltrated us. They're using the same story against them. You know that we talk about. We say Rome infiltrates churches. And we can show time after time where this has happened over the years and got actual proof that they've killed millions of people under this guise, you must follow Rome, but if you don't, we're going to go in there and kill you. And they'll say, outwardly they're going to say you can practice whatever religion you like, but inwardly they're inside figuring out every criminal way to get you to follow Rome if you don't do it after they've given you some, given you a little shove here and there. Maybe get the IRS on you like they did with Tony. And when he didn't shut up, then they had to go farther and charge him with crimes that they are committing. That's the way I look at it. What I'm getting at is this huge church scandal they're using for their benefit, because that's all you hear. And then there are many Catholics in the world. They're looking at their churches being split, divided, and that the Pope and the good guys are trying to get the bad guys out, and we'll be okay in the end because Mother Mary and all of this stuff will they believe in these doctrines. And like I said, they have a right to do that. But also start looking at the your hierarchy. Who really, and are they really? Is there really the good and the bad working here? Or is it a setup? I believe they're using this story as an advantage. So we could spend hours and hours talking about this, but just put that into your memory bank, and if you have any questions about it, let me know. Rome and the Bible. That's what we're going to concentrate on, and I'm going to try to show you that many people, like I said, many people they have no idea what Rome did in the past. People that have an idea, the majority of them, will state, well, this is the way they were then, they're not this way now. Well, I've showed you through the story of Pastor Alamo, and there are others, Father Alberto Rivera, and I can think of another, and Tupper Saucy, that they're doing it today. They've just done it in many different, in more of a 20th century SWAT team media coverage of the story, where they get the same results, but they don't have to actually take Tony and burn him at a stake or something, or take Tupper Saucy and behead him. They don't really have to do that now. They can kill them in other ways, and that's basically what I think they're doing. And if you disagree with me, let me know. You can email me, gregbeacon@gmail. gregbeacon@gmail.com. It's easy. The two main components of Papal Rome's relentless war against the Bible. They burn copies. Burning all Bible-believing Christians. They used to burn people, that she could find who were translating, processing, and distributing the Bible. So, like I said, we're going to go into that and look at it from both a secular point of view and also a spiritual point of view. And regarding this book, let me touch on it. I'm going to touch on it tomorrow. And then in the second half hour, I want to get into Cinque's book. And we want to talk a little bit about the persecution of what Rome was doing around the time of Lincoln and who this guy, Father Cinque, was and why Ronald Reagan, to me, is one of the biggest traitors that ever was in the papacy. Well, he just happened to be here at that time. It could have been anybody. Would have taken the same orders. But I don't look at it from just Reagan's economics and all that kind of stuff. But what he was doing at the higher levels, which was setting the stage for what's going on today. It's all a little progression, if you see. And Reagan has a lot to do with it because he was there at that time. I believe if it was another person, he would have done the same exact thing. Maybe he wouldn't have had the charisma as Ronnie. Though I hate the man for this, no, that was his job. It's just our job to understand why he was there. And to remember that there's certain things in life you can't change. There's certain things you are, and those are the things you should be concentrating on when you're, living your daily life. But, is it important to know this stuff? You bet, because it changes the way you view things, changes the way you act, what you may choose to do. It is your basic premise. If you grow up a certain way, you're going to act a certain way. So this book on Rome and the Bible, it says in the back of the book, to our knowledge, is the first history ever published that documents the Roman Catholic Church's complete relationship to the Bible from the first millennium to the present. The book can be entitled The Bible Through the Centuries. The author has spent thousands of dollars obtaining rare documents relevant to the history of his own library. He has also researched the topic on important theological libraries in Canada, America, England, Ireland, and Europe. book covers the Roman Catholic Inquisitions of the 11th to the 19th centuries, including the role played by the Inquisition to keep Bibles out of the hands of common people. I'll be honest with you, when I went to Catholic school, I never saw one. I mean, they're doing it right there. Now, whether I would have read it or not, because when you're a kid, you know, it depends on a lot of different things. You might be more interested in playing baseball, but at least you can make it present. I didn't know anything about it. I never even read one. I mean, the only thing I knew about religion was through catechism and church mass and everything that I did as a little kid. I was an epistle reader, so I got it. I didn't understand anything I read in those epistles. All I had to do was to make sure I got the words right. But that's basically it. The book covers, so we get into, it describes the histories of ancient separated Christians, including the Waldensians, the Lollards, the Paulicans. That sounds like Pelican, but it's Paulicians. It's P-A, you know, sometimes I can't pronounce all this stuff. So what? P-A-U-L-I-C-I-A-N-S. It gives the history of the English Bible from John Wycliffe to William Tyndale. It also gives the history of the Spanish, German, French, and Italian Bibles. It contains amazing biographies of royal queens and many others who loved the Bible. It gives the details of the papal condemnations of these Bible societies in the 19th century and Roman Catholic persecution that persisted throughout the century. It describes how Rome has changed tactics from the 20th century and has joined hands with Bible societies. The book contains 100 illustrations, mostly rare and out of print books. So that last paragraph is important. They haven't changed. All they've done is changed their tactics. And you'll see through the Tony Alamo story that I'm doing what their tactics are. And they can be pretty still horrendous. He's been jailed for 175 years. If you look at, and I'm going through now, piece by piece, every little charge they had against him, and there were five defendants, and I've got such information, shows you who these kids were, and I mean, it's an amazing, for a man to be charged for 175 years for what was going on, is completely out of the question. I mean, it's almost like an inquisition right there. I mean, at best, you know, at worst, I mean, it could have been a short, you know, at worst I would see something, you know, and as far as probation or something. And at best, this thing is a whole sham, which I believe it is. So, I mean, for 175 years of this goes to show you what they'll do to you if you talk against them and have an audience. That's important. Well, look at the audiences they have. I mean, look at the movie Angels and Demons with Tom Hanks. I mean, his audience. I mean, they told the complete opposite story of the Illuminati trying to infiltrate the Vatican, when in fact the Vatican is the Illuminati. Now, I can show you just as much evidence to support that theory, the theory that I just said, against what Hanks and Ron Howard were doing. But how come that never gets done? Because who controls the pocketbooks? Hanks is a former Catholic. I don't know what he knows about this stuff, but I'll lay odds for what he's done. He doesn't care. You know, he doesn't maybe want to know. Because there's a lot of money. How much money did he make on that movie? You know? And then the Pope is coming out now and stating that we have to transfer wealth because there's a overabundance of wealth, and we need all everybody. You know what? Take them. How can you listen to a guy like that? He's got more gold hanging from his body than probably one of the smaller islands in the world has in total. And Tom Hanks probably has more money than all of one Mexican fishing village that I just visited the other day. And these guys are spreading propaganda, which I believe it is. We'll be back. We'll be back. John is in the basement, mixing up the medicine. I'm on the pavement, thinking about the government. A man in a trench coat, patch out laid off. Says he's got a bad cough, wants to get it paid off. Look out, kid, just something you did. God knows when, but you're doing it again. You better duck down the alleyway, looking for a new friend. A man in a coonskin cap in a pig pen, $11 bill. You only got 10.
Hear it first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net.
Visit CrossTheBorder.org, CROSS, CrossTheBorder.org, to get your print, EPUB, or PDF version of the book, The Rapture Will Be Canceled. That's CrossTheBorder.org.
I know you all want answers, and believe me, so do I, and I'll do my best to get them.
Despite Nicolas Cage's promise to do his best to get Left Behind Rapture answers for us, don't hold your breath. Not everyone believes Left Behind is true prophecy. Some may even regard as conspiratorial the mainstream re-release of the Left Behind movie with actor Nicolas Cage portraying the main character as an attempt to further reinforce in the minds of all this perception of false prophecy in order to condition the masses for the play about to begin. If you want true Bible prophecy answers, get the book, The Rapture Will Be Canceled. The author exposes the Latin rapture origin, the seven-year tribulation deception, true Bible revelation of Daniel's 70 weeks, the abomination of desolation, the restrainer, America in the revelation, the image of the beast, and the mark of the beast, and the truth about God's chosen people, and so much more about Bible prophecy. This book will shatter the left-behind paradigm of future events. Get the book, The Rapture Will Be Canceled. Visit CrossTheBorder.org, CROSS, CrossTheBorder.org, to get your print, EPUB, or PDF version of the book, The Rapture Will Be Canceled. That's CrossTheBorder.org.
Since the beginning of time, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it, it has been traded, it has been borrowed, it has been purchased, it has been stolen, there's a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty, to ourselves and to our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188 or visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, right here on FirstAmendmentRadio.com at 4 p.m. Eastern or 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, 1-800-375-4188.
Okay, we're back for the second half hour. I got kind of carried away there and maybe missed a break, but I was talking about this idea that that movie Angels and Demons made a lot of money for the Vatican spreading their side of the story regarding that issue. Hanks made a lot of money. The Vatican made money because they invested in this movie. But you never hear the other side of the story, that really the Vatican is the Illuminati. And then I mentioned that the Pope is up here now, now we got two Vicars of Christ. Isn't that amazing? I don't know, many people don't even know Catholic dogma and what they're, I know it backwards and forwards because I grew up with it. And I was always told that the Pope was Christ on earth, but I never figured they could have two of them. They never, do they have, because they're still, Ratzinger was the Pope. Was he dismissed as Christ? He didn't do a good job. So we got two of them walking the face of the... Nobody questions this stuff. I mean, it's like a fantasy world they create. I mean, why don't you create a Disney character that's God on Earth? I mean, it just is ridiculous sometimes. Now, like I said, people have the right to believe in what they want, but like I said, I don't know how people sometimes believe in these Mother Mary things that are just complete. When you start really researching the apparitions and all, then you look at the Mormon beliefs, you know, people have a right to do that. I say, fine, I'm not attacking you. I just have a hard time with some of that stuff. You know, the angels in the sky and all that kind of thing. And a lot of religions are like that. You know, I guess I have the right to my own beliefs as well, so I guess I have the right to say that, and that's what this country is about. However, when you see that people like Alamo are prosecuted because they basically are saying this group is taking away your rights, it's not supporting them, and Tupper Saucy finding the same thing, even his prosecutor was a Jesuit. I mean, that gets to be, you know, these guys aren't just walking around with a collar on. As you know, I've shown you probable cause evidence that Stalin was a Jesuit priest. And people are going to say, oh yeah, right. Well, there's probable cause evidence to look at the story. That's all I'm saying. And don't look at it. I mean, you read the stuff you read in CNN and all, it is far more fantasy than what I'm saying. And that's the only reason you'd believe it more, most people do, is because it's on a big TV and they get a lot of money to say that kind of stuff and it looks real and it looks, you know, but some of the stories they come up with, I mean, if you're going to believe anything about that Flight 370, I'm even wondering about this journalist and if he really was killed. To the point where these things are so orchestrated. I mean, we got Ferguson County going on. We got this at the same time. Now you hear every other word of every politician is ISIS. Tried to tell you who ISIS is, and go back to my other shows last week, and what that name really signifies. And by that name, it's a Kabbalah way for the elite to be telling each other and laughing at us for what's going on. So look at what ISIS, ISIS, and you'll see. Then you'll see its relationship to the obelisks in Rome, in America, in Washington, and in London. And then you'll know who the guys are that are orchestrating these groups and these wars and these killings. And they've been doing it for hundreds of years. That's where I left off. So I said with Hanks and these guys, the Pope's coming out now going, the second vicar of Christ on earth. We got two of them. Maybe did Jesus have a twin brother? Okay, me. You know. Come on. What I'm getting at is the Pope saying, you know, he's talking about redistributing wealth now. What that's going to be doing, he's trying to create a worldwide, another the biggest conflict that we've ever seen in the world, I think. And they'll end up with all the money anyway. But the point is, if he's really true about that, he has to start at his own house, get all that gold off of you when you go travel. Now he travels like he's a poor man, but he keeps his wealth back in his little armadio, which is a word for dresser in Italian. Keeps all that gold rings there now. But start there, and then tell Mr. Hanks to start with him, and start with Hollywood that supports you. And you guys start getting rid of your money and giving it to the poor. Then I may believe a word you say, but it's so ridiculous to hear that. They're the richest organization in the world, and they're telling us to distribute our wealth to these poor people when they're going to keep it all. You know, Mr. Pope, I don't know, maybe that's his, I'm just consider that his last name. You know, I don't consider it a title. Mr. Pope. They all take the same name, Mr. Pope. Well, there's two Mr. Popes around now. One ex-Mr. Pope, still alive, walking. And isn't it interesting that there's an ex-Jesuit general still alive, walking? There's two of those now, two popes. Usually the Jesuit general stays on board until he dies as well. And then again, many of you don't even know who the Jesuit general is outside of the people that, you know, listen to this show. So let's get back to what I was talking about. Okay, we're going to concentrate tomorrow on this book, Rome and the Bible, a bit. Today, I want to go back into Lincoln. And I want to show you, this lays some great groundwork, too, regarding what Rome was all about. And some of this stuff is going to be taken from a book called 50 Years in the Church of Rome, written by Charles Chiniquy. Now, who was Charles Chiniquy? He was a Catholic priest during... He worked in Illinois right around before the when Lincoln was still not president, but a lawyer, and he was there prior to the Civil War, and he was starting to understand Rome's constant involvement in trying to instigate this war for their own benefit and to bring down this republic, or to separate it to a point where, you know, he didn't say this, but I think this is what the main people at the top were thinking. They said, if we can create a civil war, in fact, you can find that money came from Rome and from these from the monarchs to support the South. Now, the South at the time was trying to split the Union, and the North, of course, was trying to keep it together. So, what would be Rome's advantage to this? Well, if the South succeeded, you see, they can roll that snowball down the hill to create this war, but sometimes you never know, it's not foolproof. So you got to make sure that whichever way that snowball rolls, we're going to benefit. And I think that's what happened here. Now, let's say the South, you know, I hear these critics of the Civil War, you know, one going, the South, you know, was the right. We look what happened. You know, if the South would have taken over, we would have had our freedoms and our states would have been here. Look, if the South would have taken over, there wouldn't be a union like it is today. It would not have happened. It would have been a split country, and Rome would have just eaten it alive. You would have, I don't even know. I mean, I'd love to see what this country, your vision of what this country would look like if the South prevailed in our Civil War. My thinking is that the country wouldn't be here. It would have already been usurped. It would have already been split up into quadrants, probably papal quadrants that we would call different names. Maybe the North American Union would have transpired a lot quicker. Who knows? But I don't agree with many of those people who say our country would have been better off if the South won the Civil War. I think it would have hastened what the plan is today. Now, during that time, so we had the other side, the North, and the North was trying to keep this union together. So the point was, if that snowball rolls in North's favor, how can Rome benefit? They had to be thinking that, because that's what they thought during the Revolutionary War. They had to benefit whatever occurred they were going to benefit from. It's this thesis, antithesis, synthesis, Hegelian dialectic at its best. So what Rome's thinking is, well, if the snowball rolls north, then how can we benefit? Well, I am going to say that they had that the 14th Amendment is the key, and that amendment made you a slave. So basically what happened was we had this big front idea that slavery was the big main issue of the Civil War, when in fact you could use that as the issue, but what occurred? The snowball rolled north, and two things occurred. Rome had to, one, get the 14th Amendment passed, which made you a slave by making you a federal citizen, and two, they had to get rid of Lincoln, because he understood these people. So, even if the North won, they had to get rid of him. And everybody that was not in favor of a huge, strong 14th Amendment country, which made you a slave, because if you start looking at the technicalities, which we've done on this show many, many times, once you become an American federal citizen, it is easier for you to be controlled, and you're going to end up losing all your rights. So Rome is saying, look, and the government, if we create this huge federal bureaucracy that's going to control the states, take away the people's power, make it into one, it's easy to control them, too. It may take a little longer, but we'll get it. We'll get the bomb. You know, we will get the victory. And since that time of the 14th Amendment till now, what has occurred? You've lost your rights. The ones that were remaining, the states are about as strong as, you know, a tin house in a Category 4 hurricane. The cities are beholden to the states. The states are beholden to the federal government. Nobody does anything the feds don't want. That's why you're seeing Homeland Security in every one of your little towns. and SWAT teams in droves. There's no state rights anymore. You might as well just say, hey, we're off, you know, change the license plates, do the whole bit. You know, I'm tired of this front. Oh, I'm from Colorado. You're from, what difference does it make anymore, really? With the way that, you know, you, it's, so basically, you gotta, I can spend hours on the 14th Amendment, but that was their strategy. So, they benefit either way. Either we break them up then and we move and we move in, or we you know, the ball rolls north and we appear to have a victory in the favor of democracy, we can turn that into our benefit, which they did. And like I said, man, the blacks were free on the surface, but basically all that happened was we joined them in their slavery through the 14th Amendment, and not black or white, we're all slaves. So, brothers, whether you're black or white, it makes no difference. And this issue is never debated in the proper way. I mean, either our top leaders and everybody at the tops of our country are so stupid that they should just be told, you know, you're not competent to do this. Or they have a hidden agenda that they think that the people are so stupid, and I think they're right in this regard, that they can get away with anything. And that's probably it. So it's either one or the other. I tend to think the latter. So, Lincoln, what was this all about? And who was this guy, Chiniqui? And we're about 12 minutes in. You know, I need a couple. Some days you need 2 hours. Some days 1 hour seems like eternity. But we may even have to go into tomorrow when I talk, because I'm just going to lay some groundwork on Chiniqui. If you haven't caught my other shows, he was a priest who defected from the Roman Catholic Church because he disagreed with their policies on wanting to overthrow this country or foment the civil war and create this strife, which they did. He had solid evidence of it. And because of this, he started talking publicly. The church got wind of it. The Jesuit order had to come down on him, and next thing you know, he's charged with rape. Well, let's take Tony Alamo. Now, he was a little more flamboyant than Chiniqui, wasn't a Roman Catholic, but started a ministry doing basically the same thing. And next thing you know, he's in jail for IRS violations. And the next thing you know, he's spending 175 years in jail for sex abuse crimes. So they charged Chiniqui. They did the same thing to Tony that they did to Chiniqui, maybe. Oh, I don't think maybe. I think they did. And Chiniqui's charged with rape. Now everybody in the community thinks he's a child, you know, thinks he's a sex pervert. Just like they did to Tony. And he had was trouble having finding representation. And, man, if Lincoln wouldn't have showed up, we'd never heard maybe any of this stuff. But finally, Abe Lincoln took the case, and he was just a lawyer from Illinois. Now, as far as I'm concerned, with a story with this magnitude, with the importance of this story, and how it affects our country from the beginning to now, don't you think this trial should be talked about? Oh, it should be talked about. But man, it is hidden. Hidden in a way that shows me there is a hidden agenda. This trial turned out to be a kangaroo court, but in the end, Lincoln prevailed. They probably weren't as slick as they are now. They learned from their mistakes. Because in Tony's case, you're going to find a kangaroo court as well, but he didn't prevail. Here's what happens to Chiniqui. He tells Lincoln the true story. He says, listen, I'm innocent. Now, you're going to say everybody guilty is innocent. Well, that's not true, and it's a generalization. There are a lot of innocent people that go to jail, and probably more in this country than anywhere else in the world. We like to kill our people slowly, and we do it in a way of locking them up behind some door like a caged animal. We don't behead them like or cut their arm off like they do in Middle East countries. We're supposedly civilized. But are we? So Chiniquy says to Lincoln, listen, I didn't do it. I know what the person that is that I'm accused of raping is the sister of a Jesuit priest, and they made her lie about it because they want to get rid of me for my views against the church. So Lincoln, as a defense lawyer, has the obligation to give this man a very, very exhaustive defense, which he does. He starts checking out the bishops and what priests are saying or what's going on behind the scenes as far as what Chiniquy is saying, the important issue being that Chiniquy is being raped or being charged with rape. And he is being raped. He is being charged with rape for his views that Rome had a plan to overthrow this country and create a civil war, and they were funding it. Tony was charged with the same with sex crimes because he was saying that Rome is still doing the same thing. Look what it's doing to your country. Look what Ronald Reagan did. And they did the same thing to him. Very many similarities here. Chiniquy then leaves it in the hands of Lincoln to start researching all of this stuff, and he does, and he finds some damning information from the bishops of Chicago and everywhere else, and he uncovers some documents, and then the trial begins, and it looks like Chiniquy is going to go to jail for sure because there aren't many witnesses on his behalf, but Lincoln pounds away asking the court to listen to this information, because Chiniquy's premise is that Rome is trying to overthrow the country and funding it, and that's why I'm being falsely accused. So the judge is asked to put this, to have these bishops and all of these people testify to lay some credibility to Chiniquy's claim. And guess what? Because they weren't as sophisticated back then, and maybe back then the most endangered species in the world wasn't an honest judge, which I consider to be the most endangered species today, the judge allowed this in so the jury could hear it. Now, in the case of Alamo, I'm not going to get into specifics here, but I'm going to get into generalities. He was making the same claim. He was saying, listen, I'm being persecuted and being charged with these false crimes because of my stance towards Rome and what they're doing to the country and what Reagan was, what I said about them, what I preached about them regarding the Bible and what I've done on my radio shows all over the world and the money I've spent to send out flyers and to get people to believe this. And I want this to be brought in, and here are people that are going to testify to that. Okay? I got an FBI agent. I got other people to show you that I'm being persecuted. I also want to show that the history behind Reagan and some of the loss, all of this stuff, there's a lot of things that, and as a judge, you're sitting there going, if that's his defense, is it important? Well, of course it is. But you see, now these judges are in the pocket of these people, and they're not going to allow it. They can rely, and listen, I went to law school, and I'm not saying I'm a legal scholar by any means, but I know that a judge has a lot of leniency on what he allows in as relevant or irrelevant evidence, depending on his bias. And I believe that much of the information withheld from the jury was done so that Tony was assured to be convicted for his stance against the Vatican. So put that in your pipe and smoke it, Mr. Judge over there in Arkansas. And although he can sit there and hide behind his legal robes and hide behind, you know, what he considers to be relevant or irrelevant, you can argue either way. And in the end, then you can appeal. But what good is the appeal in Tony's case when it's been sitting on the judge's desk for years now? So we've got to look into that stuff. And we're going to look into it more in depth. But the point is, Chiniquy leaves it up to Lincoln. And Lincoln at the time then asked the judge, can I bring this information in? And the judge says, yes, it's relevant. Apparently it was relevant then, but it isn't now. And the reason it isn't is because our judiciary is basically in the pocket of Rome more than it was back then. So the judge is allowing this in, and one priest after another is coming on board, you know, and forced to tell, you know, because Lincoln's got documents, forced to tell the story. The bishop from Chicago, I believe it was Chicago, that had to get on and testify to Rome's, what instructions he was getting from Rome to foment this war. They had infiltrators. They had people going into mobs, creating, you know, this kind of dissent, which I believe they did to, you know, in Ferguson, and I believe they've done around the world to create ISIS. So they're doing the same thing today. So the judge is listening, and you could just see, according to Chiniqui, the Jesuits in the courtroom just biting their tongue, you know, biting their lip, going, "Oh, we've got to get this guy." And boy, he just brought some damning information up. But he couldn't get solid, outside of circumstantial evidence like this, information that could basically acquit Chiniqui. And tomorrow, since I'm running out of time, we're going to get right to that important conversation that took place at 2 or 3 in the morning before Chiniqui was before the jury was going to come back. And Lincoln's words to Chiniqui and Chiniqui's words to him, Lincoln, I'm going to give you a little hint, at 2 in the morning or very late that night, maybe not 2 in the morning, but late that evening, was said, "I don't really know, I'm going to be very honest, I don't know if we can prevail here. A miracle has to occur." And the question I have for you to come back tomorrow is, did that miracle occur? And how did it occur? So that he was either convicted or he was acquitted. So we'll get back to that tomorrow and then get into how it relates to Reagan and then move on to Rome and the Bible and how they haven't changed from, God, hundreds of years, millennium to today, but only that their tactics have. And that'll be a decent show, one that you should come back and listen to. And remember, you can get all these on the archives at my investigative journal site. Glad you came by this Monday. Get your week started off. I want you to have a good day. Enjoy yourself, and remember, listen to FirstAmendmentRadio.com. And, of course, the Investigative Journal, and good night.